Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, how's it going? And welcome to episode number 42 of Someone Who Isn't Me. My name is Daniel and my guest on this one is Aaron Weaver of Wolves in the Throne Room. Aaron's a very cool and erudite musician, artist and spiritual practitioner. And as the nerd that I am, I could draw your attention to the fact that this is an auspicious episode as it's the 42nd one. And you could relate that to the 42 stages of enlightenment in Tibetan Buddhism, or we could discuss the Kabbalistic name of God made up of 42 letters. Or dissect the 42nd hexagram of the I Ching Yi, representing the cycle of life, decay and rebirth, like a wheel turning the seasons from spring through to winter and around again. Or we could just go, 42, that's nice. Anyway, in this episode, we talk a little bit about the band's fantastic recent album, Primordial Arcana, which I would say is one of my favourite albums of 2021, and I wouldn't even be lying. It's wicked. It's so good. That album, along with the discussions Aaron had both here and also on the Downbeat podcast with Craig, inspired me to finally get my shit together and start writing the atmospheric black metal album that's been scratching at the door for quite some time now, actually. Anyways, that aside, Aaron and I discuss music and its creation and the mystical nature of, nature and the role that it plays in his and his brother Nathan's creative process. Long-time listeners of the pod will know that I like to get to the mystical chit-chat in these pods, and Aaron and I get to it pretty quickly, to be honest. If you enjoy this episode and you're a first-time listener, welcome and thanks. I suggest checking out the last episode with Chelsea Wolfe, also the one with Ina Selvik from Wardruna, and then maybe the Grant Morrison and Alan Moore episodes as well to crack on with, and then all the others as well, if that's your kind of thing. Regular listeners are probably thinking, holy shit, 2 episodes in 2 weeks. Yeah, you're welcome. This is Aaron Weaver of Wolves in the Throne Room. Enjoy. There's a load of stuff that I want to speak to you about. I've looked through my notes that I made, and unfortunately, they're very stream of consciousness, so they kind of jump around a little bit. So if it starts to do that, I did try and start reorganizing them so they made some kind of... so that there was some kind of obvious timeline to what I wanted to speak to you about, but there may be stuff that jumps backwards and forwards, so I apologize in advance.
Oh, that's my preferred method. I'm a chaos wizard, so...
Nice.
Let the madness commence.
Exactly. I'm glad we're getting to do this, though, because I feel like... I mean, I've been a huge admirer of your work for a long time, and as I said to you the other day in that message, I realized that it was... I think next month actually is 10 years that you went into Made of Ale and recorded for my show. So yeah, so it's been a minute that I've been a fan, put it that way.
That's awesome. Thank you, Daniel. Yeah, I remember that very clearly. It was so fun for us. Like, I'm such like a fan of just British music culture in general.
Yeah.
And yeah, I remember just feeling like this kind of, like, kind of magical thing to come into these storied halls and get to participate in the ritual.
Yeah, it's quite a place. I think there's definitely, as we will get to, I'm sure fairly quickly, places can truly be imbued with magical energy, I think. And that is one of them, which I think's quite unusual because normally we associate that kind of thing with more natural surroundings. But I think there are certain places that are quite storied, and I think that, call it the vibe, I'm not a huge fan of using that word, but yeah, it's definitely, the place is imbued with it.
Indeed. Yeah, you know, vibe is a word I use constantly, being a West Coast dude at heart.
I do as well, but a lot of people find that, I don't know, maybe it's me being British, that in the context of certain conversations, people write me off very quickly.
Which, yeah, you got to put on the appropriate costume sometimes.
Yeah, well, that's life, isn't it?
Yeah.
Very much so. So, I'm never very good at getting into these because I always want them just to be kind of fairly chill conversations. And obviously I want to speak about the record, but we should also talk about...
Only if it comes up.
Yeah, yeah. No, I definitely want to talk about it. I think the record's amazing. But yeah, so for me, the thing is with your band, when I first heard you, that I feel like there are certain artists that resonate. And I've said this with a few people on the podcast because I tend to do this only with people that I feel that about. So I think that there's a certain resonance to your band, and I find that, you know, I get stoked on music constantly, but the actual deep elemental vibe is it can be a rare thing, right? I think all creativity comes from that place for sure, so we can definitely get into that in a bit. But the thing that I loved about your band when I first heard it was it moved me in a way that certain other bands do that I hold very dear to my heart, that are that I consider to be of a not a different class, because that makes everything sound like a competition and classism is shit, but in a group that seem to be working on a level that's just beyond making music because they're stoked to make music. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the way I've looked at it is that the music is the outward form that we express through.
Yeah.
But there's a deeper source of the music. And there's a, you know, it's so deeply woven into my life just as a human being on the human path. The music is a kind of a necessary part of my own personal growth and transformation. Just, you know, living life, you know, being born, eventually dying, and then everything that happens in between. Yeah. And I think that maybe what you're sensing is that the music is not in any way a put on. It's not a, there's not an act that's associated with it.
Yeah.
It's a pure and direct transmission from my heart or our hearts, wherever we are at that time in life, whether it was 15 years ago when our first record came out or right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's palpable. And I think playing within, I guess, the genre that you kind of get put within most, which I guess we could say black metal, but it's definitely its own take on that. And I think informed by that rather than just being that. But I think that those second wave bands originally had this kind of visceral energy to them that was very connected to like the landscape. And yeah, I feel like that's something that I can feel within your work, and having listened to a couple of interviews with you and read stuff and just generally kind of pored over things, the kind of visual side of the band, you can see, I feel that that's what that's about, right?
Yeah, indeed. Like, the most important source of inspiration for us, and not just artistic inspiration, like, oh, I like that painting, I want to make something that looks like that, but rather something that's really deep and like coming from a very deep place within our own psyche or within the psyche of the earth itself, is the landscape.
Yeah.
I think everyone that encounters our music immediately notices that the music feels like a place.
Yeah.
It feels like the forests and mountains and rivers of Cascadia.
Yeah.
And that's very much by design. It's not even music that's about a place. It's music that comes from the place. And in many ways, I consider myself a conduit or a channeler for that energy. And it's just passing through me, turns into music through the, you know, human alchemy that we have access to. And then I spit it out the other side for people to connect with in whatever way works for them.
Yeah. I think when you are tuned into that, because it doesn't sound like an easy task to do at all by any means, but I think those things, I mean, making art of any worth is not the easiest of tasks anyway, but I feel like when you're true to that, that comes through very obviously. And I think that's another thing that makes the art valid. Not that that's of any kind of, not necessary, but do you know what I mean? I think that's another thing that is so obvious within the work.
Yeah, I agree with that. The music that I connect to is music that's honest and authentic.
Yeah.
And it's not just, you know, hipster stuff or trendy stuff or, I don't know, copying a certain musical or artistic style, but it's something that is rising up out of the artist.
Yeah.
Without any sort of regard or concern for how it'll be perceived. It's it's almost like breathing or just the functions of the body. They just happen. And thankfully there are people that connect with it. Like, I'm really glad that we have an audience of people that really do connect with the music, not just as, oh, that's some cool stuff, I like the riffs, but they feel it in their hearts and deeper down in their bodies.
Yeah, for sure. Do you think that, like, you came up through the Olympia punk scene, right? When you were growing up, you and Nathan. I mean, do you think that in any way, I know it sounds like quite a reach on the surface, that most people aren't going to like hear Beat Happening or Bikini Kill or Unwound or any of those kind of bands and then make the obvious connection. But I think when we're talking about authenticity and the passion within things, I think that coming up through any of those kind of scenes, through the more DIY sort of punk, hardcore and metal scenes, I think that imbues you with that thing, that desire for that.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Growing up in Olympia during those days, like, you know, I graduated high school in 1996. So that was right. And at that time was just starting to become immersed and initiated into, you know, the world of heavy metal and death metal, but also the local underground scene, and then the wider West Coast underground scene, and then the nationwide underground scene.
Yeah.
I say that to people all the time, that, seeing, you know, whatever Riot Girl shows, yeah, on the surface, just like you said, seems to have a aesthetic incoherence, but yeah, there is something in there that we learned and we picked up. And maybe we should just call it the DIY approach. It's about being always 100% honest and true to your own vision, your own artistic desires, and your own heart. And even though our music has nothing to do with Beat Happening, obviously,
yeah,
I feel a really strong connection to that scene, because I see in them the same thing that's in us, this unwavering commitment to keeping the art very pure and keeping the art connected to community too. That's another really important part of it, is that when we were coming up in music, it was not just about making music in a hermetically sealed container or making music hoping to be on some huge stage someday. It was about making music that connects us together and weaves us together into a strong, vibrant community of mutual aid and support that can carry you through your entire life.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that scene plays a huge part in a lot of people's musical upbringing, I think. I mean, I'm not saying specifically the Olympia scene, but that whole world. I mean, I don't know an awful lot about Olympia. I the only kind of connection I really have with it, bizarrely enough, is from the other side, you know, from the other coast, because I was hugely into, like, a lot of the Revolution Summer bands in DC and Discord. And those two scenes seem to have this real, as you were saying, this kind of, this wider connection.
Yeah. Well, DC and Olympia in those days were very connected.
Yeah.
Actually, the only other place I've lived outside of Olympia is Washington, DC. I lived there for like a year or so, right before we started Wolves in the Throne Room.
Huh.
And yeah, people would move back and forth. And there was always a K Records Discord connection.
Yeah.
Really different music. But yeah, there's something about this yeah, it's like wanting to make music that is uncompromising, raw, from the heart, and not willing to play any games, not willing to roll over for the music industry or for capitalism as a system, but to ride the snake in our own way, with the intention of, I don't know, there's a moral element as well.
Yeah.
That comes to mind. There's a concept that music is meant to change the world, or at least change people's individual lives in a way that is positive, that leads towards healing, that leads towards justice, that leads towards a greater flourishing of love in this world, in this 3D incarnation.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you were saying earlier about the alchemical process of making art. That's exactly what that is. That's the alchemical process. Is, you know, most people just think it's, when you talk about alchemy, they're like, oh yeah, that was the old, like in the olden days when people were taking base metal and trying to turn it into gold. But obviously that was all a metaphor for the journey of life anyway.
Yeah.
Well, that's how I view it.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, alchemy is, it's such a deep subject, and it's a bit of a trendy subject, especially now in this world of social media, when images and whatever memes can kind of fly around.
Yeah.
And I think that sometimes that can be really mind expanding under certain circumstances, but it also can kind of obfuscate things and keep it at a surface level understanding about what alchemy is. Like, what does it actually mean when you get down into the energetics of it? The more veiled or occult truth about what's going on there in those old images you see from the Renaissance or whatever.
Yeah. But I think we're in an age at the moment now where it feels like so many people are on that path. And I mean, they probably don't view it within that, but you know, just listening to the conversation you had with Craig on the Downbeat about mindfulness. And I believe that, yeah, it is very trendy right now. Everybody's talking about their yoga practice. Everybody's talking about their meditation practice. Everybody's talking about mindfulness. And that's great. I'm all for that. If people are going to be like, oh yeah, this is the cool thing, and I'm going to get into it for a minute, I believe it's like any kind of occult practice, which all those things are, which no one really wants to actually talk about, but that they form the basis of most practices from both Eastern and Western, I believe. Great. People are dipping their toe in, and once you start to do that, you'll see the benefits. And some people continue down those paths, but I guess that's like any kind of calling, isn't it? About anything in life, forming a band, for example.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, a lot of people would want to sort of belittle the fact that there's this trend, like witch talk or whatever, just, you know, younger people kind of getting into it and enjoying the style and the aesthetic of it, and denigrate that. I don't do that at all, man. Like, yeah, just like you said, I think that anyone that is starting to do some work on themselves and journey inwards, using these techniques, I mean, that's a positive thing in my view.
Yeah.
I think, you know, there's traps and pitfalls along the way, but those traps and pitfalls are part of the path. And, as more and more people become initiated into it and have, you know, been down the path, there's more people that can kind of help the next generation along when they run into the dark spots or the dark nights of the soul or the infinite hell realms that you sometimes do encounter on the journey, whatever, the journey of human life, the journey of magic, one and the same. I know that I've both been in those places of being completely lost and terrified. And also I've been helped along by elders who have been there themselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, have found some paths out of the swamp of despair.
I agree. And I think those moments where, when you have those are an initiation within themselves anyway. You know, that's, as you said, that's part of the path, isn't it? I think having those moments where they feel like an entrapment, but they're another part of the puzzle that's just got to be moved around, overcome, however you want to view it. Possibly. I don't know.
Yeah, I believe, I mean, I've experienced that. And so I'm not going to say that's the way it is for everyone, but I've seen it in myself, and I've seen it in enough people. I've seen it in literature. I've seen it in mythology, that it seems as though it's an archetype.
Yeah.
The one thing that I wish I would have had in my mind when I was going through my darkest times was to not to take it so fucking seriously.
Yeah.
I was, you know, when I was trapped in the Dark Night of the Soul, it just seemed as though the world was ending and I was completely lost and would always be lost in these hell realms. Mm. I wish I would have had a little bit more lightness about it, a little bit more of a strong understanding that this is just something that's happening right now and this will pass.
Yeah.
And there's something else that will come up on the other side of this that's very worthwhile. And to, laugh a little bit about it. Don't take it so seriously.
Yeah, yeah. I hear you. But to be able to have that aerial view for a split second is never easy to get, is it? But
no, that's where friends and mentors can come in.
Yes,
who can provide that outside perspective.
Yeah, I agree. Do you have like a teacher that actually I know what we're going to get into if we start talking about that. So let's save that actually for a moment. Let's talk a bit more about the band.
For sure.
I did say this was going to jump around, but this is, so I apologize if this feels like it's kind of not making much sense. So, you know, when you did the triptych of like, Two Hunters, Black Cascade and Celestial Lineage, and then you did, Celestite, which was totally different, a totally different sonic prospect. Same, I believe it was definitely working with the same archetypes and feelings again, but very different sonically. Was that kind of like a response to completing those three? Because I did see that you'd said that Thrice Woven represented the end of a cycle and that this new record, Primordial Arcana, is the beginning of another. So I just kind of was curious about that, actually, because I think when that record came out, it's a fucking great record, no denying, but it felt like a curveball for some people.
Yeah, that was an interesting time, man. Celestite. So I can only speak for myself, but for me, the process of recording Celestial Lineage was so intense.
Yeah, no doubt.
So personal, so cathartic, so, magical and trippy. And then the time after Celestial Lineage was such a intense time in my life. It seems as though Celestite was a necessary way to close that up.
Yeah.
I felt like the working was so big and so in some ways out of control that Celestite, at least in my understanding, I know Nathan probably has his own feelings about it and Randall would have his own feelings as well.
Yeah.
It was a way of closing the container. I felt as though with Celestite, I'd left something wide open.
Yeah.
And, artistically, spiritually, personally, there was just this, open door that anyone or anything could walk through. And Celestite was a way of clearing the channels a little bit, giving respect to the process that we'd gone through, respect to the journey, and then begin to very slowly open up to what comes next. And I mean, that's the trip of being an artist, is that it's such a personal thing. Like, it's so tied up with the deepest and most intimate and most secret parts of your psyche. And yet it's revealed on the world stage as a rock and roll record that comes out on the internet or whatever. And it's up for each person to experience it themselves. But I mean, that's what was going on for me artistically as the raison d'etre for the record.
Like somewhere between a palate cleanser and a smudging of the studio or psyche in at large almost.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
So Primordial Arcana, let's get onto that because we've already spoken for 25 minutes and we've not even mentioned that really. I mean, this ties in with what we were saying about the whole DIY ethic and a musical upbringing and a grounding within those kind of mindsets. That the record was written, recorded, mixed, everything at Owl Lodge, right? That's your place.
Yeah, for sure.
So how was that, doing that? Because I imagine that that it would be the natural step. And I know that frequent collaborators that become a part of the working environment and working relationship within a band, that is a very special thing. But at the same time, when you're so obviously working on a set path that you're carving yourselves, I think, yeah, making the record yourself is the natural step. But that's not an easy task, is it? I mean, it's a bit like saying, oh yeah, this is what we're going to do. By the way, it's one of the most difficult things on to get right. But I think the record is so great and it has this weight and density to it, but real clarity as well. And it's real credit to you. You mixed it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I hadn't planned on mixing it, but the job was thrust upon me by circumstance.
I mean, mixing is a, pardon the pun, but that's a dark art within itself, I think. I mean, we can all sit and record at home and throw together a board mix and go, yeah, that's pretty cool. But then I know people that their job is they are mixers. And then if you throw it to them, it's it'll come back this whole other thing. But you've smashed it on this record, I think. It sounds great.
Thanks, man. Yeah, no, it was my initiation. I'd never mixed anything before beyond my own personal, just kind of goofing around in the studio on my spare time stuff.
Yeah.
So it was a challenge for sure. But like I just alluded to, it was necessary because we had planned on doing the thing you just spoke about. We did all the tracking and tracked it in a very meticulous way. Mm. And
how so?
With great intention, everything all... Well, just, I mean, the way we work is we... Maybe it's more of an old school way. We're tracking as we mix. Or we're mixing as we track. Okay. In that we build our record in layers. So we'll record the drums, we'll record the basic rhythm guitars, and then we'll keep adding layers of guitar, synthesizer, whatever, ambience, until it sounds correct. We don't leave any of these sort of artistic things until the mixing phase.
Yeah.
There's this whole philosophy like, oh, we'll fix it in the mix. We'll make it sound cool in the mix. We'll bring the magic in the mix.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just not the way I like to do it. Like, I want to commit as early as possible to the vibe of a particular part and have it sound the way it's going to sound.
Yeah.
And then mixing is just a matter of kind of clearing away any murk or any sort of distortions and highlighting certain parts of the sonic spectrum.
Yeah.
So yeah, we tracked it and it sounded awesome. Passed it off to a mix engineer because, of course, as you said, mixing is a bit of a dark art. Mm. Increasingly, it's becoming a specialized job.
Yeah.
And when we got the mixes back, it was just an incredible, one of the most deflating days of my life.
No way.
To hear this record that we had, you know, poured so much love and energy into, it was as if all of the magic, all of the love, all of the spirit power, all of the vision had just been sucked right out of it. And it was just a empty shell.
What do you put that down to?
I think it's because maybe going back to the very first thing that we talked about, like our music is channeling spirits in the woods that like we work with and interact with and have lifelong relationships with. And if you're not also working with those same spirits or at least understand them or understand the spirit realm in that same way, you're just not going to be able to do the dark art of, you can make it sound good in quotation marks, but can you have the feeling? Can you have the heart feeling? And the answer is no. And so when we heard that, we just realized, well, fuck, I mean, we're just going to have to do it. So I had to buckle down. I mixed the first song, Mountain Magic, at least 100 times, just starting from all the faders at zero, all the hardware at zero, mix it. I did that 100 times. And then right around mix number 99, it started to sound good. And then a few more mixes, I realized it wasn't going to get any better. And that was it. That was the mix. And then I just, you know, took that sonic aesthetic that I found on the first song and brought that into the other tracks.
Yeah.
So yeah, you know, one of those initiations that I didn't expect to have to do that, work, both esoteric and exoteric, but what a blessing to, realize, oh, we can totally do this going forward. We could work with someone else or we can do it ourselves, and to have that freedom, to have that power is a really good feeling.
Yeah. Plus your studio is based in amongst, am I right in saying it's in the forest?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
So yeah, it's, I mean, like we live in a really crazy place, because, you know, Olympia is like a small, big town, small city. Mm. There's like a whatever Walmart or across, you know, 10 miles away that we could go to. But the local university has a pretty large tract of forest, maybe 1,000 acres, something like that. So a pretty big chunk of rainforest that they have in a conservation trust of some kind.
Is that Evergreen State? Is that right?
Indeed. Yeah. It's like the local hippie college. You know, it's founded by people who are just coming off acid in the mid '70s.
Yeah.
And, so it's one of those kind of hippie schools. That's changing. I think that, you know, that old generation of heads from the '70s who were the original, faculty have all kind of died off.
Yeah.
So it'll become something else. But, there was like a earth based consciousness that was woven into that institution. Mm. And, so Evergreen State College owns, if you want to put it that way, this tract of land, and our studio butts right up against it. So right, if you walk out the back door of our studio, you're in my favorite bit of forest in the world. It's spectacularly beautiful and so special to me because, I mean, it's the forest I grew up in. Like I grew up just, I don't know, a mile away from where our studio is at.
Yeah.
So I've been playing and adventuring in this same spot, bit of forest for 40 years.
Yeah.
And in many ways I have grown along with the forest because when I was a kid, the forest was, you know, scrubby second growth. It had been logged off around 1910. And now it's like, there's like huge trees there and like all of the animals and plants, you know, mature Cascadia rainforest are back. It's coalesced.
Yeah.
And the spirits are back. And, yeah, man, I can't express enough about how important it is to have that connection so close.
Yeah. I think that's apparent with the work. So I think that's job done on that front. Let's talk a bit about Mountain Magic because did I get sent that first? I must have done, right? And then when I was watching the video as well, that's obviously super important because I think it clarifies a lot of the thoughts that I had.
Mm.
And the way I view your band. I think the album artwork does that as well, clearly, because, I mean, as you've discussed, I think it has such a painterly quality, and I think the lighting on it does feel like an old Dutch master, and I think that's a very beautiful thing. But more importantly is the content of it, which they are ritual items, right? It looks like a working altar to a certain degree, and I feel like, you know, with the wolf skull and what I think are wild turkey feathers for smudging, but I'm not sure. But then there's the Athemi as well and the crystals. You know, anyone that is within that world, I think, and is involved in magic is going to look at that straight away and realize that this isn't an aesthetic put on. As you were saying earlier, clearly it feels like it's the altar which
yeah I mean it's
I'm assuming they're all those
yeah
things.
It's definitely a working altar.
Mm.
Yeah, indeed. Like, you know, none of us are like orthodox Thelemites or anything. Like, we're not doing magic in any particular way with any particular rules.
Yeah,
but yeah, like you said, anyone who works in these realms will identify the cover of that record as an altar that was built with magical intention.
Yeah.
And has, you know, there was a reason why we made it a certain way, and there's visions and prayers woven into it.
Yeah. I think all good art does have that. But yeah, I think anyone is going to recognize those things. And I understand what you're saying about not following any kind of orthodox traditions, because I think most people that work within those realms, it's such a syncretic thing anyway, that they just, you know, it's like, oh, I have a bit of this, I have a bit of that, this moves me, this bit resonates with me, and you know, you build your own set of tools, I guess. Like, you build a toolbox from all these different places. And I mean, you know, I've heard you talk, and when you were saying about your meditative practice, and it feels like those things that I've heard you talk about, and I don't know, some people might take this as it being disparaging, but it feels like you could be one of the Ram Dass people. I don't know how to describe that. Do you know what I mean?
Meaning
that I know that if I'd said that to some certain people, be like, oh yeah, he's definitely one of the Ram Dass people. They'd be like, oh right. But it, you know,
no, I feel like,
you know, I mean,
I'm in Ram Dass's lineage for sure.
Okay.
I mean, like, yeah, like
good.
Like that whole, I mean, I'm definitely like in the lineage and the wisdom stream of those, whatever, white Western hippies in the 70s who took tons of acid, blew their minds open, realized there's a lot more here that can be accessed in other ways apart from entheogens.
Yeah.
And began to look around, began to experience the all of the blisses and pitfalls of finding gurus and teachers. And I'm so appreciative that that generation did what they had to do, so I don't have to go through the same madness.
Yeah, I agree.
But I mean, yeah, I mean, like the if anyone who's like doing meditation and is a Western person, they're coming through. That's coming through from a very small number of people.
Yeah.
Whether it's Ram Dass, whether it's Chogyam Trungpa, whether it's Shunryo Suzuki in San Francisco, whether it's Jack Kornfield doing Vipassana meditation.
Yeah.
It's like 20 people. And now, you know, there's millions or tens of millions who are operating inside of that stream in one way or another and elevating it and finding other places to go with it.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. As much as you are, as I can hear that within your being, I also think that there's obviously this clear understanding of what I would term, but please don't be offended if you wouldn't term it that way, but I would call it an animist worldview, because I feel like the way that I've heard you talk about spirits of places and specific areas of places and other beings within what people would consider inanimate objects. But I disagree with that. So I think that would be, I don't know.
Yeah. I think animism, that's like a word I don't use very often, but, the meaning of it 100%. I mean, that's like absolutely what we are, the way we look at the world. And it's very experiential. It's not like some philosophical concept. It's like, in this place in the forest, there are spirits that you can behold and interact with through your, I don't know. It happens on a astral plane. It happens in your third eye. It happens in your heart. It happens in other places in your body. It happens in your dreams. Mm. It's just like lived experience.
Yeah.
In that way, it's a very scientific view, because it's verifiable. It just happens. It's like something that actually occurs. It's not some made up fantasy. It's just my experience of life.
Well, it's the default modality anyway, I think, you know, and it's almost like, you know, we're singing the praises of the guys that and ladies that came through in the 60s and 70s and smashed their way through into these other realms. They're also the people that built the fucking internet, which has pretty much ruined a generation because it was like, you know, this beast that's been banging on a door and the door's been opened and it turns out that this thing's running around destroying everything. But without getting too much into that, I've lost my train of thought now, just getting angry. I apologize.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. and they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Well, yeah, you know, the boomers have left us with a, you know, a very mixed bag of dross left over from their own alchemic forges, and here we are. Yeah, man, like, yeah, the internet knocked down the door. And you know, I mean, they had like those West Coast visionaries who created the internet. They had utopian visions,
of course.
And it seems as though the thing that has polluted it is greed.
People, essentially.
Like, I'm not really one to, people, but also people acting in a certain mode.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's like political and economic systems that we're so embedded in, we just think this is just the way it is. But, you know, there's other ways of being that could exist. Like, we can vision them in our fantasies. We can think about them in works of literature or in music. But it's a bit more of a trick to bring it into 3D reality.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like nothing, what, as you said, was this utopian ideal has been so twisted, and it's got to the point now where you're feeding algorithms just this idea that people are a resource. I mean, that's not going to end well. But anyway, again, let's not get into that.
Yeah, I mean, that's not, man. Like, I'm just really careful with any sort of apocalyptic narratives.
Yeah.
Because I just see that, you know, we all laugh at the fundamentalist Christian preacher who says the world is going to end on this date and it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And we all laugh at the hippies who said the world's going to end 2012, which I believe it did actually.
Yeah.
And it doesn't happen, and we laugh at them. And now here we are caught up in our own apocalyptic narrative that we're going to end up in surveillance capitalism, dystopian hell, and you know we're going to all end up in this hell realm.
This is all our. This is the.
I mean, maybe, maybe not. But I'm just.
This is the collective dark night of the soul for sure. Maybe that's the what we were talking about earlier. It's something to be worked through.
I think so, and I guess if you know if we want to take the as above so below, maxim, and apply it to what's happening in the world. I think we would both agree that the dark night of the soul on the other side of that is something that's extremely beautiful. And it's the dark night of the soul is epiphenomenal to a heart opening or a consciousness shifting that brings us as individuals into a higher dimension or a higher state of consciousness, or if at the very least older and wiser. So if indeed we are in a dark night of the soul as a culture, as a planet, isn't that a good thing? Isn't that just a necessary part of a transformation that is occurring?
Yeah.
And we can't stop it from occurring. I guess my personal prayer is that maybe going back to what I said about my own dark night of the soul, I wish I wouldn't have taken it so seriously. I wish I hadn't been so easily trapped in fear loops and apocalyptic visions about my own consciousness, my own soul, AKA I will be insane forever. I will be sentenced to be tormented by these demons forever. Apply that to the time we live in now. We are going to devolve into a dystopian surveillance capitalism hell. All of our minds will be downloaded into the mainframe. We'll be tortured by archons forever. I mean, I don't know. I just don't want to give too much of my energy to those sort of dark visions, because just from my own lived experience, I just know it's not very useful. And fundamentally, I don't think it's true. I think that's just a dark fantasy that we don't have to participate in.
Yeah, I agree, actually. You're right. And I think making art is an incredible way of fighting through that. I see it that way personally for me.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, we've all had like 18 months that have been tough. But I think application of creativity is a means of really helping pull out of that.
Pull it out, process it, move it through, Yeah, man. I mean, as like a, you know, metal musician who is very deeply intertwined with very dark visions, and like I'm around a lot of dark side sorcerers,
yeah,
and Satanists and this sort of thing, I've really enjoyed, that's, you know, let's see, how should I put this? I think there's a big difference between using art to process darkness versus calling it into being.
Yes.
Versus willing it into being in the world or in your own life.
Yeah.
And it's a tricky line.
Yeah. And also,
but it's one that is.
No, sorry. I was getting excited. Carry on.
No. I'd reached the end of my thought. Yeah. Please, okay. Please carry on, Daniel.
I was thinking it is a fine line as well, because I know what you're saying, that you know, we live in a scene where the gnarliest stuff is fair for imagery and lyrical basis and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But, and you're saying
eating babies.
Yeah. And you're saying that, you know, that we shouldn't look at that as a means of, you know, pulling those things forward. But the flip side of that is obviously to be considered that, as anyone, as you were saying earlier, you're working with teachers and energies and forces that are using you as a conduit, but that could also be the other side of it as well. I feel like it's taking a real apocalyptic bent now, this conversation. I apologize. But yeah, anyway, let's go back to your record.
Well, also, I mean, no, there's one more thought that's really important. Yeah, absolutely. We can be used as artists. Mm. Let's take magic out of the equation, because that's going to turn a lot of people off, or it just doesn't make sense to them. Mm. That's not the language that they use. As artists, yes, we align ourselves with certain energies, and certain visions come through us. And I can only speak for myself that I'm very careful about what I align myself with. I'm just so clear in my own heart that I am aligned with life. I am aligned with love. I'm aligned with transformation of consciousness into a peaceful, loving, bounteous future. Yeah. I can just see it in my artistic eye. And I mean, I've been around like really dark forces that are calling into being destruction. They are calling into being nuclear annihilation. Mm. And I feel bad for those people. It just seems like a real waste of time.
Yeah. I think the clarity to see that, though, is definitely something that comes with age, without wanting to sound like old guy chat. But I do think that, or maybe I'm just viewing that from my own personal perspective, that realization through doing, yeah, changing my mindset, I think that's something that has come about as I've got older.
Yeah, same for me. Yeah, it takes time to, well, I mean, in my case, it just is taken a long time to understand who I am and be able to see myself on my deepest soul level, like see my own heart without any interference or distortion from the outside world, whether yeah. that's, you know, conditioning I've received from all the way over here, like occult realms or past lives, all the way to the mundane of things I saw on TV when I was a kid, or family stuff, or media messaging that we've all received. Yeah, man, I wish I'd known myself like the way I do now when I was a younger man. It would have been a lot easier, but
yeah,
you know, this is just perhaps the human life that we're all signed up for.
Would you have listened, though, do you think?
Well, I don't know. I can't, it just doesn't, I guess it doesn't work that way in my mind. Like,
yeah,
all I can see is the journey.
Yeah.
And, you know, once you start imagining, oh, what if I could go back in time to my younger self? Well, you just get into this weird sort of paradox, yeah. you know, kind of a Back to the Future kind of shit that, kind of falls apart in my rational mind.
Yeah. I hear that. Right. So Mountain Magic, the video. We started to talk about it, and then I threw a spanner in the works and we went off on a tangent, but not really. So in the video, there's a couple of things that I wanted to sort of ask you about, because I have a terrible habit of tying things together or needing to, actually, is probably a better way of describing it. So I have some questions. So I apologize in advance. I know now through the previous conversation that you had that you're smoking mugwort at the start. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's like a mugwort and maybe some sage is mixed in there, but primarily mugwort.
Yeah, and then that started making me think about that. I mean, that's a huge part of what you do, right? I guess, because, I mean, the label was called Artemisia, which is mugwort or wormwood and that class, right, of that genus of plants. So I guess that's something that has a real important part in what you do. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, just getting into the realms of plant magic. And in my case, working with what I've heard called subtle allies. So you can drink ayahuasca, you can smoke cannabis, you can take mushrooms, and that's a whole realm of experience. But any plant you can work with in a spiritual way or a psychoactive way, but their voices are just very, very quiet. And you know, mushrooms will blast your mind wide open. Mugwort, you have to listen very, very carefully, and it's very slow and gentle and soft. Maybe it only comes in your dreams, the messages coming from the plant. And that's an approach I really appreciate, because it's so antithetical to our modern Western approach to everything, which is just like, make it as big as possible, take as much of it as possible, make the experience as intense as possible. So the idea is to make it as small as possible, make it as quiet as possible, make it as ephemeral as possible, and still be able to tune into it. And mugwort in particular is such a cool one because it really does come in the realm of dreams. It's part of its lunar magic, is to enhance the dream life so you can more easily bring messages and teachings from the dream world into waking life. The exact opposite of cannabis, which in my experience steals your dreams. Like it takes like your whole waking life turns into a dream. You're dreaming all the time and you go to sleep and it's just like a blank slate. I mean, no knock on cannabis. I've smoked weed on and off for years. It's been amazing medicine. It's a double-edged sword. It's not available to me anymore, but who knows, maybe it will be again someday.
Yeah. I find that, that world really interesting. And I find it super interesting that it's being, not that it needs to be, but it's being, backed up maybe by science, I almost said legitimized, but that's definitely the wrong word within the context. But do you know what I mean? It feels now that people are beginning to understand, if they're not viewing it from a spiritual level, but they're realizing at least from a physical level that there is this whole world of plant life that interact with us constantly, whether we're aware of it or not. And you and I would probably view it in the sense that's definitely the spirits of those things from an animist perspective, as much as it is the actual physicality of it, you know. Like, have you read a book by Peter, I think it's Peter Wohlleben, called The Hidden Life of Trees?
No, you know, I was actually just hearing about this on a podcast, I think, is the concept that trees are communicating each other through root networks and then, you know, whatever chemical pheromones or something they spritz through the air.
Yeah. But also not just with each other, but with people as well, which is why, that you get like a real difference between, you know, ancient forests and forests that have been established for, I don't know, as a combat to deforestation, I suppose. Because
that's interesting.
Yeah, when you actually enter within those places, that there are, there's such a soup of, as you said, sort of pheromones and chemicals within the air that it really, the human body like reacts to it, to the point where there's so many studies now about medicine and healing within those environments. I think there was one study in Korea that I'm probably going to get this all wrong, but they found that simply by being in some of the older forests there, that the physical effect of what they're saying is the pheromones, but you and I could view it in another way, you know, it'll lower blood pressure, it'll increase arterial flow, and it has a real physical effect. And there was another thing about recuperating from serious disease, that the recuperation time was so exponential, done in this one place that was based in the middle of a forest, that the scientific minds behind it were just like, oh, it's because of this smell, it's because of this pheromone, it's because of this. So then they started trying to recreate those within a lab environment.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, of course. And yeah, it's like, well, why isn't this working? It's like, well, but yeah, I found that.
Why not just leave the forest the way it is?
Yeah, right?
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Wouldn't that be easier?
Yeah.
It's like making a problem where there isn't one. Like,
yeah.
I mean, that's like the message. That's the message I receive again and again from ancient forests. It's done. Like, there's nothing to figure out here. Just leave me alone and I will help you.
Yeah.
But you know, I mean, that's,
yeah. Yeah. I get
or at least I'm willing to make a bargain. Like, cool, you've already logged off this whole area for your tree farms. No problem. But just this one zone, let's just leave me here so I can continue to exist on this planet so I can help you.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, in terms of like, our band does not get into politics at all. I think the political sphere is completely shot through and completely infiltrated with complete bullshit. I don't look at the world through that lens at all. The only political action, if you want to call it that, that I'm really engaged with currently is the forest defense that's happening in Vancouver Island, just across the border in Canada, where they are about to log the last like 2.5% of the old growth West Coast forests.
What?
Whatever. Canada has this liberal government. They're like 100% committed to combating climate change. They're 100% committed to indigenous rights. They're 100% committed to X, Y, and Z. But yet the very last stands of ancient cedar, Western hemlock, Douglas fir forests are slated to be cut. And unless there's action on the political side, on the direct action side, on the civil disobedience side, on the magical side, capitalism will just wipe it all away. And
that's crazy.
Then science will discover 5 years from now, oh shit, we shouldn't have done that, because it turns out that these forests are 100% necessary for carbon sequestration. They're 100% necessary for whatever, the fucking magical pheromones that let you live for 1,000 years. Who knows?
Yeah.
I mean, this is the time. And and these sort of issues exist all over the earth. And I get a little bit frustrated sometimes that there's not a bit more outrage about these existential issues, the same way there is about, I don't know, the bullshit social media meme of the day.
Yeah.
Whatever it might be.
That's crazy though. Like you said, I mean, you think Canada to a certain degree, I mean, you know, it's all much of a muchness if we're honest, but there does seem to be places like that, like New Zealand, where it feels like they have something towards an understanding. And I believe that that's because they're the indigenous populations in those places that are actually being listened to, or well, in New Zealand's case very much so, but in Canada it that's quite a different story at the moment, obviously with all the recent news. But you'd think that would not be happening. That's crazy, man. I didn't know that.
It's madness. I mean, you know, whatever. I'm sure there's like national parks, just the way there are in the United States.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's still. It's this tiny fragment of what was there before white colonizers came.
Yeah.
And Jesus Christ, just like leave the last tiny bits that are left.
Yeah.
I don't know. It drives me crazy.
Yeah. No.
But I mean, at the same time, there's a huge direct action occurring. There's been 1,000 arrests. in the past 6 months, because mostly young hippies led by indigenous elders, First Nations elders, are doing old school forest defense, the same kind of stuff that was happening on the West Coast 15, 20 years ago, when people would lock themselves to trees. They would do all these sort of physical direct actions, putting their bodies in between the pigs and the log extracting machinery. It's just super necessary.
Wow. You're saying about the cedars, and that's such an important part, I think, from what I can gather, again, about everything we've been talking about as an intrinsic part of what you do within the band. Like in the video, there's a bit where I think you're burning cedar fronds, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I started thinking about, I never put this together before, actually, but like on Celestial Lineage, when it's the track Thuja Majus Imperium, which is obviously a reference to that, isn't it? Because the great cedar is the Thuja Placatus, I think it is, which is, yeah, that's the tree, right?
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, I don't consider myself a citizen of the United States. I'm the Western Red Cedar Empire citizen.
Is that why there's the bit where you're placing an offering to the tree that is salmon, isn't it? I think.
Yeah, there's a symbiotic relationship traditionally between the salmon runs that would come in from the ocean and the forests.
Yeah.
It's actually the bears that would distribute a lot of that energy. You know, like the salmon is coalescing and condensing solar energy because they're consuming plankton, which is a plant that's growing in the ocean.
Yeah.
And their bodies, when they come in to spawn, are oftentimes scattered about by bears and other creatures. And so part of the reason why the ancient forests in Cascadia are so fertile and the trees grow to such enormous proportions has to do with this relationship between forest, salmon, bears, plankton, the sun, the whole thing. And of course, those webs of interconnection exist everywhere on the planet, on Gaia. Yeah. And every location has its own unique form of that. Like, you know, what are these magical transformations that the Earth is doing all by itself in wherever I live? And in my own life, it's been such a joy to connect to and learn about those processes here in my home.
Yeah.
But I know they happen, of course, everywhere on the Earth.
Yeah, trophic cascades, I guess, is the scientific take on it. Yeah, but yeah, I hear what you're saying for sure. As I was going through the record and kind of making notes, as I often do when I first get a record, which is a terrible thing to do because I should just fucking listen to it and enjoy it and be moved by it, but I still can't help doing these things where I have to pick through it all the time, which is something of an annoying curse. But there you go. In Spirit of Lightning, where it mentions Sununos, that's obviously, I mean, that's what we're talking about. He's like a sort of spirit, sort of steward of nature, wasn't he? Like the horned hunter. And I guess where it's talking about hunting a white stag, like in Celtic lore and like in Arthurian myths as well, that represents the white stag or the white hind sort of represented the spiritual realm, doesn't it? So I guess is that whole thing is just like a metaphor for like a hunt or a quest for sort of the spiritual or the numinous.
Yeah, indeed. You know, I mean, that's the beautiful thing about mythology is that it operates on so many different levels of understanding.
Yeah.
So yeah, part of it is that traditional view of the white stag as the, I don't know, it's the thing that's always just beyond grasp. It's this, the thing that comes to mind is a Zen koan.
Mm.
You know, your thinking mind is trying to grasp it. You're trying to solve the problem with your ego mind or with your thinking mind. But it's always just out of your grasp. And the way I see it, the white stag represents that same sort of very slippery and unquantifiable understanding or knowledge that can only be gained through esoteric means. It can't be grasped through the machinations and the clever schemes of the thinking mind. The bounty of the hunt is taken through other strategies.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, that's very true. I mean, that's part of the problem with me is that I will sit and prior to experiencing something, feel the need to try and grasp it, which is essentially the basis of all my conversations when I'm doing these, unfortunately. But part of that, the plus side of that is that I get a better understanding of things and realize that none of that's really important anyway. But yeah.
Yeah, you know, the struggle to grasp something intellectually is also a path. I don't know, let's think about like the tradition of studying sacred texts like the Torah in Jewish tradition. Yeah. It's through arguing about fine points of theology or philosophy in this very intellectual way that deeper understanding, you know, let's say heart knowing comes into being. So whatever floats your boat. I think critical theory is the same way. Like Cody and I were just saying yesterday how annoyed we are with whatever, like leftist critical theory, like Hegel and everything stemming from that.
Yeah.
That sort of root guru, you know, Foucault, this sort of thing. And in my understanding, it's just like that entire body of knowledge is like a koan with a billion words, and because there's no end to it, but it's through the process of engaging with these ideas that like all of a sudden something cracks open, and the white stag is taken,
yeah.
Even if just for a moment, and you know, the download occurs. I'm the kind of dude that would prefer the koan with five words, just because I'm a minimalist in that way.
Yeah, but then that's funny, isn't it? Because it feels like now the as I was saying earlier, that it feels like science is suddenly butting heads again now with the mystical, because obviously those were two paths that ran totally in parallel back in the day. That's a terrible thing to say as well. But, you know, in history, because it was astronomy and astrology, et cetera, physics and alchemy, or chemistry and alchemy probably would be a better way of looking at it. But those two things totally separated and divided, but now like a DNA coil, they're kind of coming back in on themselves, and you've now got these bizarre kind of theories about science, and I don't want to get into that too much, but it feels like they're kind of coming back into the same realm. And as long as it gets to the point where people are looking at those things in that sense from either one lens or another, I think that's got to be a good thing, right?
I think so. I mean, I could talk about this all day, but in short, if we could have the powers that we have developed through technology, if those were informed by the deep love that is always rising up from the earth, and the vision that the earth or celestial entities can imbue us with, if those two could come together, I mean, that would be Eden. I see no reason why that won't occur. There's like a thing in human consciousness where we always think we've arrived at the end of history. I remember like in high school, my chemistry teacher saying, this is it. Like, there is no particle smaller than the neutron, proton, neutron, or electron. These rules of chemistry are it.
Yeah.
And remember at the time saying, what are you talking about? I know there is something else.
Yeah.
Like because from the experience, I've read a history book. I know that at all these different points, the paradigm is that this is it. We have arrived at the end of history. We know all there is to know.
Yeah, that's scientism though, isn't it? It's like, we know everything there is to know right now. Don't worry, guys. We figured it all out. Here's everything. And it's like, well.
Exactly.
Well, not at all.
Not at all. And it never has been. And it never will be.
Yeah, because it's a constant journey, as is everything. But yeah. I'm conscious that we've spoken for an hour and a quarter, and I don't want to take up too much of your day. But I think I know you're a dad, aren't you? And I feel like hearing you talk about these things, I think this is how things will change. Hopefully, I think, because I imagine you're telling your son about these things.
Yeah, man, my son is an interesting case. He's it's his birthday on Sunday. He'll be 8.
Okay.
And he's like a fucking science wizard. Like the way that his mind works.
Yeah.
He can understand these really complex mathematical and scientific concepts so easily and so naturally.
Yeah.
And at the same time, he's so tuned in to the world of spirit.
Amazing.
And to feel this, you know, love in his heart. And of course, you know, I mean, all children are magical, and they all seem, especially as a parent, like you see the beauty in your child. Like, you just can't help but do that.
Yeah.
But I also see this in a bunch of other kids too. And call me a hippie, like call me like a space case, but I do genuinely believe that there is transformation in consciousness occurring.
Yeah.
And that there will be a union between the brilliant mind that can create the internet or that can create a solar panel, and the loving heart, the wisdom of a loving heart that is perceived through conscious, through access to the wisdom of our ancestors, the guidance of our ancestors, the wisdom of the earth, the wisdom from angelic beings. And there won't be this contradiction between the two. That's what I want. That's what I call into being. And art is the way for me. I mean, that's the palette of pure creation where I can vision this future that we all want. That's all, everyone wants exactly the same thing. That's what we want to have.
Yeah.
And I see no reason why it can't occur.
Yes. That's a great way of finishing. Thanks, mate.
Yeah, man. It was great to talk to you, Daniel. I was looking forward to this conversation, and yeah, it was a great pleasure.
Thanks for listening to episode number 42 of Someone Who Isn't Me. As I said, you can check out the other episodes online if that floated your boat. There's a bunch more, and they're all pretty great as far as conversations go. I mean, I really enjoyed them. That's pretty much the only reason I do these. You can find me on the socials at Daniel P. Carter. The podcast is at Swim Podcast. Aaron is at Cedar_Serpent on Instagram, and the band is at WITTR Official. Their latest album, Primordial Arcana, is out now, and as I said, it's one of my favorite albums in 2021. Not that that means an awful lot to anyone else, other than it's my suggestion that you go and check it out immediately if you haven't already. It's absolutely fantastic, beautiful, and moving stuff. Like, subscribe, and spend a few seconds leaving a nice review if you would. Also, treat yourself and those around you with love and respect. And that includes the places around you as well. Thanks again. I'm out. Peace.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.